It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later on Central Time, we'll look at new data that shows a backlog in untested rape kits in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin.
In his State of Education address last month, Wisconsin School Superintendent Tony Evers focused on laying out a plan for closing Wisconsin's achievement gap between white and minority students in the state.
Wisconsin has the widest achievement gap of any state in the country between black and white students. Black students drop out of Wisconsin schools at a rate of 1 in 3, and Hispanic and Native American students at a rate of 1 in 4.
According to Evers, part of the solution can be ensuring that teachers are familiar with their students' cultures. For example, classrooms in urban Wisconsin that have white middle-class teachers paired with poor minority students could suffer from a cultural divide.
The University of Wisconsin's Institute for Urban Education is trying to bridge those differences by training teachers from around the state how to lead culturally conscious classrooms in the Milwaukee Public School District. Tracy Nix is director of the Institute for Urban Education. She joins us from our studio in Milwaukee. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. Thank you.
What's the mission of the Institute for Urban Education?
The mission of the Institute is to create quality educators for our Milwaukee Public Schools system. So we really strive to create culturally responsive teachers, and we strive to create teachers that are not only culturally responsive but conscious of the environment and the students that they teach in the classroom. So that's part of our mission, and also our mission is to provide professional development for Milwaukee Public Schools teachers and teachers in the surrounding environment that are interested in urban education, and to also promote research in urban education across the state.
Well, as we mentioned, Superintendent Evers laid out a plan to try to address the state's achievement gap. How important a part of that, solving that achievement gap problem, is this kind of education for teachers and bridging the culture gap that you're talking about?
I think that goal, first of all, is very, very important. And the Institute, we strive to also bridge that achievement gap. And we do that by ensuring that when our teachers come to the Institute, and let me just first just give a little background so everybody understands when I talk about our teachers through the Institute for Urban Ed, our teachers come from across the state of Wisconsin. So we have teachers that volunteer to be a part of our program, and they may come from Madison or La Crosse or Stout. And these student teachers, they choose to be in Milwaukee and learn about urban education. And so when they come to the Institute, they come through our program and they attend a seminar that we have once a week. And through that seminar is when we really talk to them about urban education and bridging that gap. And the first place we start is looking at their own cultural biases, you know, and getting them to understand or looking at why they want to teach in urban education. And so our goal in bridging that gap is helping these teachers understand the purpose of culturally responsive teaching, how it benefits students, and the purpose of knowing your students and the community in which you teach.
You know, teaching math is teaching math. The numbers are the same no matter who I'm teaching it to. How can these cultural differences get in the way of that kind of basic teaching?
You know, understanding the content is great. We understand that basic math concepts are the same, but how you teach those math concepts is where cultural diversity or cultural responsiveness comes into play. So while you may be teaching the content 1 + 1 = 2, you have to look at every student's learning style. And while you may have a student A, who's able to catch on to the concept easily, you may have student B who may need the instruction differentiated, or you may have another student who may not be able to learn in the traditional type of teaching setting. So when I talk about cultural responsive education, it's more than just understanding the content in what you teach. It is how you teach it and understanding the learning styles of your students so you can understand how best to teach them.
And Superintendent Evers gave specifically the example of, you know, a white middle class teacher, maybe from a suburb or an outstate part of Wisconsin, in a largely, say, African American lower income classroom. So what kind of teaching differences, what kind of learning differences might we come across in that specific situation?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because most of our teachers, 99% of them are Caucasian teachers, and they do come from upper middle class, socioeconomic status, from the suburb. And so when a lot of our teachers, not all of them, but some of them come in with what we call deficit thinking. And it doesn't have anything to do with them caring about the kids. It's just this thinking when they come in that the students that are in the urban setting, they need help, or something is wrong with them because they're not learning in a way that they're used to seeing kids learn, or they're not learning in a way that they have been taught themselves growing up. So when you have a teacher that comes in and has been raised in a particular setting, middle class setting, a white middle class setting, and they come into an urban education setting, they sometimes have biases, they have stereotypes. And when you try to teach a child that does not look like you, sometimes those stereotypes or those biases can come across in your teaching. And as a result of that, some teachers can have lower expectations for their students. So that is really a reason why teachers need to be need to understand cultural differences and before they even go into the classroom.
Can there be differences as fundamental as just the way we talk in some parts of Wisconsin versus the language that kids might use in a classroom in a different part of the state?
Absolutely. I had a teacher last year who was telling me, as I went back to talk to her to check on her, see how she was doing, and she was telling me how the transition, and she now works in MPS, and she said one of the things she had to learn was the language of the students. And part of it is cultural, then part of it is this generational. And so she said she just had to learn some of the slang, some of the terms, and she had to learn how the students communicated with each other. And the purpose of learning that was so she could relate to the students. And she said she wasn't able to really feel like she effectively could teach until she could relate to the students. And part of that was understanding the students' language. And that's just not in the urban ed. That's just, I think, across the board, students, you know, kids nowadays have a lot of different language than when I was growing up. So
we're talking to Tracy Nix. She's director of the University of Wisconsin Institute for Urban Education, talking about getting past cultural differences between teachers and students. We'll get into topics like parental involvement coming up in a little bit. The Institute focuses on training teachers to deal with things like cultural differences in their classrooms.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you're a teacher, have you ever seen challenges relating to your students for cultural reasons? On the flip side, as a student or parent, have you ever felt like the classroom has been unaccommodating to your culture? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit. But first, Cheryl Gasser joins us in the studio because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive.
That's right. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Cheryl Gasser. As a WPR listener, you know you're always going to hear something worthwhile when you tune in. Now is the time for you to put a value on this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Veronica, we heard from 47 listeners last hour. Thank you so much for those pledges. The response this drive has been nothing short of amazing. And here we are, a new hour, a new topic during Central Time. And our goal for this hour is 23 pledges by 4 o'clock.
And you'll want to make that pledge because your gift of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for 2 tickets to go on a WPR trip. Help us meet this goal and get entered in the drawing by making a contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We'd like to think of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio like a tuition-free lifelong education. You learn something new every single day right here on Central Time. And then there's everything you enjoy about Wisconsin Public Radio. All you need is a radio, a computer, or a mobile device to listen on.
And it's your support that makes this lifelong learning available to you and hundreds of thousands of other people, too. That's amazing. It's really community learning. You have the power to share information and learning with a huge community of people when you support WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And everyone who pledges this drive will be entered into the drawing for two tickets, not one but two, on a WPR trip in. You get to choose your own adventure. Maybe it's Alaska or France or the Rhine River in Europe. It's your choice if you're the lucky winner, and you will be entered into the drawing when you make a pledge of any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and telephone number to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. You can enter by sending a postcard or, better yet, by making a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, Peter. What's happening? We have a sort of a problem here. Yeah. You apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS report.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I forgot.
Okay, I'll expect that on my desk in a few minutes.
Ugh, I'll just turn on WPR. Take my mind off that situation.
17 of those are new members. We love it.
We're looking for your pledge of support.
Oh, man, pledge drive. I can't catch a break. Jeez Louise, they have thousands and thousands of donors. They gotta be rolling in dough. Why do they keep on asking?
Well, because, Peter, the quality programs you enjoy on WPR cost quite a bit of money.
What? Okay, but you keep on boasting like you have like 50,000 members. Isn't that enough?
We really appreciate all of our members, but we're doing a lot of new things right now. I mean, think about the internet streaming that you're listening to.
Well, it's free, right?
It's free for you, but not for us. We're really happy that so many listeners use it, and the more who use it, the more bandwidth we need, so the more it costs. With every new innovation like this, our mobile app, our new website, new shows, everything adds up.
Okay, I get it. It takes a lot of money.
So make your contribution to WPR, Peter, and then you can get back to that TPS report cover sheet.
We really are talking to you. Don't make us come through the radio. Pledge now. Here's someone to tell you how.
Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make your pledge during this fall membership drive. Veronica here with Cheryl Gasser. Asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift of $10 a month, maybe $15, whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And this would be a great time to consider a sustaining membership, because when you become a sustainer, you choose a monthly gift amount and set it up to come from your bank account or credit card. It will continue until you decide to stop it or adjust it.
Because WPR is one of those things you never want to live without, you might as well support it with a convenient, flexible, sustaining membership. Get started now with a gift of $5, $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Every pledge drive, we hear from people all over the country and even around the world. We get pledges from Texas and Alaska, Germany and Japan.
You found something very special here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's made possible by listener support. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your support makes WPR what it is, a resource that you enjoy and one that's treasured around the state, around the country, and even around the world.
We are looking for 15 more pledges in the next 40 minutes or so. And as an added bonus for your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you'll be entered into that drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip, and sustainers are automatically entered.
And this pledge drive, we're offering something very useful for your pledge of $5 a month. Ask for the handy WPR logo secure ID tag. You'll put one on your key ring and stick the other to your phone.
And then if you ever lose your phone or your keys, these tags will help get them back to you. So protect your stuff and your public radio station. When you pledge $5 a month, ask for the ID tags, get entered into the drawing, and support Central Time. All at WPR.org or 888-202-2555. 52, and thanks for your support.
We're back with Tracy Nix, director of the University of Wisconsin Institute for Urban Education. The institute focuses on training teachers to work with cultural differences in their classrooms.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. If you're a teacher, have you ever been in a position where you felt like there was just a cultural gap between you and your students? You're speaking a different language, not getting what you each needed from each other. Or on the flip side, as a student or maybe a parent, have you ever felt like the classroom was not an inviting place given your cultural background? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tracy, I had mentioned I wanted to get into the issue of parental involvement. Is that something you work on in training teachers from around the state working in Milwaukee Public Schools?
Yes, we do. We spend a great deal of time on it. In fact, because, I don't want to say this, it's just one of those issues that we really have to look at. We have the students look at their perspectives. So if you are a teacher or a student teacher, I would say, and you have the expectation because of your own background and your own experience that parents should be highly involved in the school and that they should be visible at the school, you're going to take that expectation into the classroom setting that you're in. Well, in the urban setting, sometimes you may find that parent involvement is not as you may not see the parent involvement as active as you might see maybe in the suburb. It doesn't mean that the parents don't care, and it doesn't mean that they're not involved. But that's a lot of time the attitude that the students take on. They think if they don't see the parent every day or if the parents aren't as visible as they would like for them to be, that the parents don't care. But we teach them that that is not the case at all. A lot of times in the urban core, we're dealing with parents with more than one job. We're dealing with kids that are being raised by grandparents who may not be able to make it up to the school as often as they would like to. And we're also dealing with parent involvement in the non-traditional sense. Our parents that are with our students in the urban core, their parents are just involved with their students just like any other parent, but it just may look different. It's a lot of involvement at home. It may be a lot of involvement within the family. So what we try to teach our teachers as they work with students is you've got to think outside of the box. Just because you don't see a parent as much as you would like to doesn't mean they're not involved, doesn't mean that they don't care. You know, we understand that what the research says about parent involvement, the more parent involvement, increased student outcomes, but we tell our teachers, you got to think of other ways, non-traditional ways that you might be able to get parents to respond to you and to get them involved. And don't give up so easily. If they don't come to a conference, doesn't mean they don't care. Just got to find a way to contact them. It may be going through a sibling or aunt or uncle or someone in the community who works in the school. But we constantly work on don't give up on our parents. When I say our parents, I'm referring to mm-hmm. the parents who have children in urban core.
I wanted to ask about your personal experience. Mm-hmm. I understand you've worked in public education in Chicago, yes. Kansas City, is that right?
Yes.
So what's been your experience with dealing with these issues, cultural diversity issues in the classroom?
Oh, my goodness. When Chicago was the first teaching experience that I had when I graduated. I was born and raised in Kansas City, but when I graduated, I moved to Chicago, and I taught on the West Side, and I had to deal with cultural differences, and it didn't have anything to do with race. You know, I grew up in a middle class, socioeconomic status. And so when I went and I taught in this school in inner city Chicago, I did not see the resources that I thought I would see or the resources in the schools that I was used to seeing as I grew up. And so this was years ago. I mean, I'm not old or anything, but this was a few years back. And I'm not sure how different it is now. But some of the resources just, it wasn't there. You know, books, we didn't have a lot of books. And I remember constantly every week going to the library, checking out books so my students could have books to read in their classroom. And I had the same issues with parent involvement. My first, it was an initial shock to me. It's like, well, where are the parents? And the parents were there. I just had to go really to them. I did home visits. I found siblings. I found cousins, aunts. I found neighbors who knew the parents of the students in my classroom. And I made it a point to make sure I made contact with all of my parents in that school year. It may not have been the first month of school. It could have been 3 or 4 months. But I made sure that I made contact with that family to so they knew that I cared about their children. And as a result, the more parents saw that I was trying to contact them, and the more they saw that I cared about their child and their learning, the more I saw them at the school, the more visible they became. And so it was about building relationships with the parents, knowing the community, and understanding the lives that our students live. A lot of times when my students came in, before we can even address any of the curriculum, we just had to talk about what happened to you on your way to school. You know, we had to talk about how was that walk to school. Some students were afraid to walk to school. We had to talk, had to make sure that my students ate. You know, some students got to school late and they missed the morning breakfast. So I kept snacks in my room for the students. I had to make sure that these basic needs were met before we even can start teaching reading or math. Because if a child is hungry, they're less likely to listen to you trying to teach reading because their stomach is growling. So I had to deal with not having some of the resources that I needed. I spent a lot of money my first few years of teaching. I spent a lot of my own money buying crayons, markers, and pencils, just supplies for the classrooms. And I know teachers today who still do that, mm-hmm. you know. And some of our teachers that come through our program, you know, they're shocked. They say, well, some of our students come to school and they don't have pencils and pens. I say, yeah, so... You know,
Tracy, we'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Okay, thank you so much.
That was Tracy Nix. She's director of the University of Wisconsin Institute for Urban Education. The institute focuses on training teachers from around Wisconsin to work from students from different cultures in their classrooms.
Coming up after the news, we'll look at new data that shows a backlog of untested rape kits in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin.
And remember, you can support conversations like this one with your pledge right now to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to Wisconsin Public Radio to stay informed with issues, to know what's going on, to be entertained, enlightened, and that's why it's worth your pledge. Right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here on Central Time and on the Ideas Network, we try to keep you in touch with the world and Wisconsin in particular. Make a pledge to keep that happening. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Get entered into WPR's drawing for trips in a few different parts of the world while you're doing it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll be joined by our resident book expert, Steve Paulson. He's got some great suggestions for fall reading, and you can get his extended list with your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio.
First, it is the fall membership drive. Cheryl Gasser joins us in the studio now. We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future Wisconsin Public Radio listening. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 6 more pledges to reach this hour's goal, and we got about 24 minutes. I think that's totally doable.
We should go way over that.
We should go way, way over. So let's hear from you. If you haven't made a pledge now, we'd love to hear from you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you pledge, you will be entered to win 2 tickets on a WPR trip.
Yeah, donate any amount during this fall membership drive, and you could travel the Rhine River in Europe or see Alaska's France's beautiful scenery or experience the rich culture and cuisine of France. You help pay for central time when you give, and you get a chance at a really great trip at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, I am sure that you have found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've listened to Central Time with Rob and Veronica. That is the beauty of Central Time and all the shows on the Ideas Network. You hear multiple points of view, and you value what you hear. And now we're asking you to make a pledge in support of this great programming at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You connect with Wisconsin Public Radio for information, for engaging content, for entertainment. Your gift supports that connection for you and for others across the state.
9XM leadership gifts of $100 a month or more are critical for our continued success. And if you'd like to make a leadership gift, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Make your gift now, WPR.org.
If you're thinking, hey, my tax dollars, federal, state, already support Wisconsin Public Radio, you're right. They do, and thank you for that.
But contributions from individual listeners make the quality and variety of programs on WPR possible. Listener support is actually the single biggest piece of our budget pie. You make such a difference. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution to pay for the radio programs you listen to, like Central Time. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
How'd you like to cruise up the Rhine River, visiting beautiful towns in Germany and France? That could be you this December, enjoying Christmas markets, tasting fine cheeses, walking through picturesque towns. You'll even visit Beethoven's home and enjoy classical music throughout the trip. This tour is just one of three trips you'll get to choose from when you win our Choose Your Own Adventure drawing during this membership drive. Your pledge of any amount gets you entered, but no contribution is necessary to win. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Learn all the details at WPR.org/drawing or enter with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Good luck.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Cheryl Gasser is in here with the Central Time team asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall membership drive. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
And you can make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You know, Rob, new members are such an important part of these fund drives. We've heard from 7 so far this hour alone. Every single member makes a difference because listener support is such an important part of the funding that makes WPR programs like Central Time possible.
Whether you tune in for one favorite program or you find yourself checking in throughout the day, the whole week, you're getting value from what you hear. If you've never given before, start off with a pledge maybe of $5 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio and Central Time. Now, make the decision to support WPR financially. It's as simple as that, and you really can help with a pledge of any amount. So join, renew, or make an extra gift. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've heard from Kathleen from Port Washington this hour. Kathleen says, "You are the only station I listen to, and I'm lost if I don't hear you daily." Kathleen, thank you so much. What a wonderful thing to say, and what a wonderful pledge to make. We really appreciate it. Now, how about you? Make your pledge for the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge now and ask for the WPR logo secure ID tags. With your gift of $5 a month or more, that's $60 for the year. Now, these tags are similar to luggage tags, but they're better because they're smaller and they don't show any of your contact information.
Just put one on your key ring, stick the other on your phone. If you lose one of those items, they'll have a way back to you. You can ask for one of these handy tags when you pledge $5 a month, $60 or more. And you might get to use them while you travel to the Rhine or France or Alaska, because you'll be entered in that drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. So make that pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you are a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio, thank you so much. But hey, make today the day you increase your support for WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose. Make that contribution. Make that additional gift. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We got off to a great start this hour already. Now three pledges away from our hourly goal. Thank you. Let's hit that in the next 3 minutes and then shoot way over it. Make that pledge. Help us hit this goal early. That's amazing. I love doing that. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much if you've already pledged during this drive. If you're already a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, your pledge makes such a difference. You make what we do here on Central Time possible. If you haven't given yet, do it now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support.
According to new data released from the Joyful Heart Foundation, Milwaukee is one of a handful of cities across the country facing a backlog of untested rape kits, and the rest of the state isn't faring that well either.
According to the foundation, Milwaukee reported over 2,600 untested rape kits in its police storage facilities, and data from the entire state of Wisconsin, as compiled by the Attorney General's office, found over 3,000 additional untested rape kits statewide.
Here to talk about the data is Sarah Tofte, Vice President of Advocacy for the Joyful Heart Foundation. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start by talking about these numbers. Over 2,600 untested rape kits in police storage facilities in Milwaukee, over 6,000 kits statewide. How did you arrive at these numbers?
Well, we didn't actually calculate the numbers. It was an initiative of the Wisconsin Attorney General. And it's our understanding that the Attorney General was interested in assessing, you know, how many untested rape kits there were throughout the state, and it just happened to coincide with a public records request we had made, and so they shared the data with us. I will say it's very unique to have a state take on a count on their own, and so we very much were encouraged by the fact that this was an initiative of the Attorney General's, and I do think it shows that on some level, they really care deeply about figuring out what they're doing with their rape kits.
Well, based on these numbers, how would you say that Milwaukee and Wisconsin are doing?
It's a great question. First, I do want to point out that just because Milwaukee and Wisconsin are some of the few states right now that we know of that has a backlog, doesn't mean that they're any worse than any other city or state. The fact is that we don't know how big the backlog is across this country. Very few states track it. Very few cities publicly acknowledge it. The federal government doesn't require submission of this data. It's one reason why we undertook this project, to figure out what was going on in cities and states across the country. So just because Milwaukee and Wisconsin are now reporting backlogs doesn't necessarily mean they're doing anything any worse than any city or state. It's just that we know about it now. That being said, you know, these are a lot of untested rape kits to have in police storage facilities. These really represent cases that perhaps didn't make it as far through the system as they could. Rape kit testing is an essential tool in an investigative toolbox to move these cases forward. So it's perhaps not the best sign that you have all these untested kits there. For some survivors, this may represent some lost justice, and for some offenders, it may have allowed them to get away with their crimes.
How would you say the rape kit comes into play when we're talking about prosecution of cases?
Yeah, that's a really great question. There's been a lot of discussion around this about the value of testing all kits. There's definitely common agreement. Most people understand you would test a rape kit in a stranger case because it may be one of the only ways you're going to discover the perpetrator's identity. And, you know, over the last several years, those of us working on this issue have learned of the incredible value of testing rape kits in all kinds of cases. We've been a part of some in-depth case studies in Detroit and Memphis where they're testing every single rape kit that they had in their backlog and moving forward. And what they're finding is they're getting incredible investigative results in all kinds of cases. Even when you know the suspect of the perpetrator, you want to test the kit to confirm their presence at the alleged crime scene. You want to test the kits to identify serial rapists. Serial rapists can be stranger rapists or acquaintance rapists. There are ways in which when you test the kit, you can affirm a victim's version of event and discredit the suspect. And you can also exonerate innocent suspects as well. So there's so much investigative value. And I think until the last few years, we didn't appreciate as much how much you can get from testing kits in all kinds of cases. And what we've seen is if when you're really serious about a case and you want to move it as far through the system as you can, you're going to test the kit to see what information you might get from it.
Now, the Milwaukee Police Department has been fairly critical of this report, and they say it's lacking context and that it fails to give the time frame the untested kits cover. And given that you said that they are collecting this data themselves, that you didn't go after it, I don't know, how do you make sense of this in the response?
Yeah, you know, it's a response we've seen before. It is not uncommon for a city to respond to news of their backlog by, in some ways, I think trying to devalue or undervalue what they have in their storage facilities. And I think we just simply disagree about the value of testing these kits. That for them, what they consider to be context to help people understand why they weren't tested. For us, I think it feels a little too close to putting a lot of the onus in a way on the victim, in the sense of, you know, when they talk about cases where they didn't move forward because the victim did not want to cooperate or it was an unfounded case. I think what we encourage them to do is to take a second look at what's in their backlog and give some consideration to the reforms that have been building in other cities and states, and take a new look at sort of this evolving issue. I think there could be a lot of value to testing those kits in their backlog. I think they might be surprised to see what they find, and that they might actually it might actually change some of the criminal justice outcomes in these cases.
What are the typical reasons that cities and police departments give for not testing these rape kits?
A lot of reasons that are very similar to what Milwaukee has said publicly over the last few days. Some cities believe that there's no value in testing kits or little value in testing kits when you already have a suspect. Again, some point to cases that they investigated and decided a crime didn't occur. Or some people note that victims did not want to cooperate. I will say, again, pointing to the work being done right now in Detroit and Memphis, when they went back and tested kits, even in cases where it was noted that the victim did not want to cooperate or the case was unfounded, they realized that perhaps their initial assessment of that case was not correct. That, for one, this category of victim not wanting to cooperate, it's a very subjective category, which might seem, you know, clear and black and white. Well, the victim didn't want to go forward. If you go back and look at the case files, you can see either that the victim was pressured, you know, by the police not to move forward in some cases, or told that her case wasn't a very strong one, so she should just drop it and not follow through on it. Or in some cases, they might say the victim failed to cooperate when they made a very half-hearted attempt to reach out to the victim, didn't get an immediate response, and so they closed the case. We saw a lot of that going on in Detroit and Memphis. And testing the kit in those cases and getting some very valuable results back from that kit helped police and prosecutors to see that, you know, in some cases, a victim sort of withdrawing from the process may not be as much because the victim didn't want to move forward or the case wasn't founded, but that, you know, it was very difficult for her to come forward to law enforcement, and maybe she didn't receive the treatment she deserved. Maybe she felt a lot of judgment or a lot of pressure to, you know, take back or rescind her allegation. And so, again, I think we really strongly encourage Milwaukee and any city dealing with a number of untested kits in their backlog to take a look back and see what kind of cases are connected to those untested kits and whether they deserve another chance or another look.
Now, Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen has also weighed in, and he said a task force was in place in 2012, and now that a lot of the problems with the backlog have already been rectified, does this mean that maybe Milwaukee doesn't deserve this attention that it's getting, you know, in this list of other cities with backlogs like Seattle and Las Vegas?
Yeah. You know, honestly, any place where we find a significant number of untested kits and where we haven't necessarily, at least publicly, seen activity of really taking on reforms, we would encourage that city to continue to do some work on this issue. For us, what we highly recommend for cities is that at the city level, they form multidisciplinary task force, forces consisting of police and prosecutors and community-based victim advocates and the crime lab to really study the untested kits and make some decisions about whether they want to move any of them forward for testing, to really look at some of the results they're getting from testing those old kits, and to make a determination whether or not they can move cases forward again that they initially had set aside. So we think Wisconsin certainly deserves the attention, because I think any city or state deserves some attention when there are a significant number of untested rape kits in their backlog. And we hope, you know, they'll perhaps keep an open mind, and we understand that they feel very strongly that those kits that are there for a good reason. But again, we're seeing jurisdiction after jurisdiction that confronts their backlog, learning that perhaps those kits that they didn't think had any value ended up having a tremendous value when it came to identifying perpetrators, identifying serial rapists, and getting to move previously closed cases forward through the system.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
We've been speaking with Sarah Tofte. She's Vice President of Advocacy for the Joyful Heart Foundation. She joined us to talk about rape kit backlogs in Milwaukee and across the state.
Coming up next, Books to Blow Our Minds is recommended by one of WPR's resident book lovers. But first, it is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive, a chance to show your support for all the programs, all the conversations you listen to throughout the year. Take that important step when you donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are still looking for two more pledges in the next 5 minutes here. We can certainly get there with your help. And here's a great reason to give.
Yeah, pledge any amount and you're automatically entered to win two tickets on a WPR trip. You could choose between a holiday tour of Europe along the Rhine River, an Alaskan adventure, or a trip to France.
Thank you so much if you've already given. And if you haven't, this is your chance to help us stay on track and enter that drawing by making your contribution right now to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In that last conversation, we learned about a backlog of testing kits in cases of alleged rape and why it's important to try to catch up with those, according to our guest, as an example of the timely and serious and important conversations we have here on Central Time.
Your support makes the many topics we cover every day on the show possible. We've heard that topic about rape kits. We heard about challenges in the classroom. We're going to hear about book recommendations and so much more in a single show on Central Time. What's that worth to you? What is that worth for your brain and the way you like to think about things and learn about things? Choose a gift amount that works and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to WPR takes just a few minutes, and in return, you'll get so much back. Consider a 9XM leadership gift of $200 a month.
That comes down to less than $8 a day, and it makes the talk, the news, the music, the entertainment that you count on from WPR possible. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I like listening to WPR because I learn so much. You never really stop learning. Being a sustainer for Wisconsin Public Radio makes my husband and I both feel like we're members of our big, wonderful family. My husband and I discussed it. He says, like the Barefoot Contessa, how easy is that? I think Wisconsin Public Radio is important because it makes you think outside the box. I tend to have a narrow vision, and listening to public radio has opened up my eyes and my ears and my mind to all that can be and all that is. I'm Pat Steers. I'm from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I enjoy very much being a WPR sustainer, and I know you will too.
pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob and Veronica here. It is Central Time. We're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $5 a month or $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
If you're sitting on the fence, you've never done it before, giving really just takes a few minutes of your time. You give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. You can give in one lump sum, or better yet, you can become a monthly sustainer. But no matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes to support the station that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to WPR, you are not alone. You might be alone in your car, sure, or your home or office, kitchen, you name it, but you're sharing the experience with me and Veronica and Michelle and Galen over there and all the other listeners, too.
We have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together. Your support helps all of us share the cost of WPR programs and everybody benefits. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are so close to our goal this hour. Just one pledge will put us over the top. Hey, maybe that's you. So that's a great reason to become a member. Here's another one.
Give any amount and you'll be entered to win two tickets for a WPR trip. You'd get to choose if you win. You could cruise along the Rhine River in Europe. You could discover Alaska or sample the French lifestyle.
Thanks so much if you've already given. If you haven't, do it now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio on your way to and from work every day and some on the weekends, you're listening to more than 700 hours a year.
If you've never given to WPR before, make your gift today of maybe $5 a month to get it started. $5 a month for hundreds of hours of listening? That makes WPR one of the best information and entertainment bargains you're ever going to find. Your gift, no matter what amount you choose, really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
One more pledge.
Just
that's
one.
All we need to
it's
reach
you.
Our goal. One more pledge. It can be you. Give the amount that's right for you. And if you need some help figuring it out, consider this. Say you hear three things a day and you're really glad you heard. If you paid a dime for each of those, what would that work out to? Maybe $10 a month? Well, make that contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The clock's ticking and, oh, the suspense. No, we made it. We made our goal. We've gone one over our goal. Let's keep it going on in through the news and into the next hour. Help us make this pledge drive successful. Help great keep great conversations coming to you each and every day. Make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You give because you listen, because WPR matters to you. Make that pledge. WPR.org and thanks.